Yeah. That's back to the Bronco Nagurski story about the plow.
It's true. Gentlemen, thank you. I'm getting ready to talk with Joe Madden as we speak. You're listening to WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago, Sports Radio 670, The Score, a radio.com sports station. And on a day like today where there is some rain, I always suggest if you've got HD, 104.3 HD2, that's our signal. It'll come in nice and clear. You'll be able to hear the bass in my voice on that a lot better. We've got a lot of stuff to do. The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Hey, welcome back, Chicago Wolves. They start their season October 5th. For group and season tickets, visit chicagowolves.com. And this hour is being brought to you by Burris Equipment. Visit them at burrisequipment.com for details. Joe Madden is here. Tony, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
I'm here about the business. Ain't that right, Joe?
Joe Madden.
He's got that flair about him. When his name's announced, the place erupts all the time, but he's always in the middle of something good.
Manager for the Chicago Cubs.
And then Cliff and Shelley, the Penguins. I mean, all this stuff, the Penguins, like, pooped all over. They poop every 15 minutes, apparently. That's what Penguins do. All over the brand-new rug on the other side. This was kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, I learned a lot from watching Joe.
Joe Madden with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Okay, nice.
We get the opportunity every week to talk with the manager of your Chicago Cubs, Joe Madden. And his show is presented by Magellan Corporation. I'm Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. What's up, Joe?
Good afternoon, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Well, I had my cup of coffee. I did the lineup. I'm ready to go.
Okay. Well, anything interesting in the lineup today?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have Zobrist leading off today, and Wilson Contreras will be back, too.
Oh, that's great news. Wilson Contreras is back. One of the things I was going to ask you about Zoe was, what were some of the things that you were looking for in the few days that he was back that made you confident about putting him in the lineup?
Well, the big part about it was just taking our time with it. He had been sick the week before and really hadn't played in several days, so we wanted to be very sure that he's ready to go. And again, knowing so like I do conversationally, is just trying to wait for the right moment. The other day I put him in the on-deck circle against Tater because we were down to three players left and he was the best option, but I was really trying to avoid him on that day too. So today was the day we had targeted. He and I talked about it. So he's out there today. He's had a couple days here to get his ground balls, take his BP, get reacclimated, all that stuff. And that's the part that people don't really consider sometimes. It's been a very difficult year for him personally, and he comes back to play baseball, and right before doing that, he got sick. So, again, just wanted to be a little bit overly cautious, but he's ready to rock and roll tonight.
What's it like to have him back in your clubhouse?
Oh, it's great. I mean, he's just such a stable personality and figure within our group. The guys definitely look up to him. Obviously, he's just that's just who Zoe is. He's the kind of guy that, as a baseball player, you're going to grab take towards him because he's so matter-of-fact. He gets into it. He's emotional in that regard. But at the end of the day, he could really explain himself very simply and well. And I think the other guys feel that impact.
Wilson behind the plate, or you have him in the outfield?
Oh, no, he's behind the plate. Absolutely behind the plate. We got Johnny Lester pitching tonight. So getting him back with Lester, we thought would be a good idea.
Okay. Do you have to be careful about how much you catch him because of all the hamstring stuff?
Of course. You know, tonight he would – I think he was scheduled to catch nine innings. He hasn't done that yet. I talked to him yesterday on the phone after the game, and he's still pretty confident. So is our trainers. But we'll see how the game's in progress. If he has to catch a lot of pitches early in the game, if there's a lot of pitches thrown, that's part of it, too. How many times he has to squat? I mean, six innings with 150 pitches is different than six innings with maybe 73. So there's always variables. And we'll just watch him carefully and try to make our best guess.
What's the latest on Javi Baez?
He's good. We just did it. I'm giving him today off again. It was too sore to play yesterday's thumb. Probably he would tell me he might be able to play today, but with tomorrow off, thought this was a perfect opportunity to give him a little mini all-star break. And I don't know if you've been watching Addison on defense. He's been great also. So under the circumstances, getting these other guys back tonight, we thought it'd be best to give Javi his 3 days off. And then I think by Thursday, he should be pretty much back to normal with a full tank.
I remember there was a game when you took Darvish out and everyone was like, oh my God, I can't believe Joe took Darvish out. He was rolling. And now I think we probably have a clearer picture on why you did that, is that he was struggling with some stuff. So what's going on with him, and how confident are you that he's going to make his next start?
That actually happens often, though, when the conjecture is created. And like I told you before, I'm not going to defend myself, but a lot of times when people rush to judgment, they don't have all the facts. But that's part of our game when it comes down to controversy or people trying to evaluate or critiquing judgment making. There's so many other little things involved in these decisions. As an example, like Zobrist, not playing the last 2 days on purpose and then having him play today. So all these things are set up. Moving forward, I think Darvish is going to be fine. I think we were trying to curtail some of his innings pitch. He's really building up after last year where he did not pitch that often. But the good part about it, if you look at number of pitches thrown, he's been really pitch efficient this year. So even though the innings are higher, I think overall the number of pitches thrown are still a little bit more tasty overall. So I anticipate him being well. I saw him in the weight room yesterday. It was all smiles. So I'm hoping and believing that he'll be able to pitch on Saturday.
Cubs manager Joe Maddon joining me here on The Score. So some of the offensive struggles returned, as is its wont to do in baseball. It happens like that sometimes. How much was it Milwaukee and Seattle's pitching, and how much was it approach?
It's approach-based. Listen, I'm not going to denigrate anybody. We just got done beating DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Stroman in New York with great approach. And then you come back home, and we don't have the same approach against these other pitchers. And it really comes down – the approach, that's a broad word. It really comes down to organization of strike zone. It's the ability to – not want to fire on pitches out of the zone. It's the ability to be willing to accept your walk. Your dad used to tell you walk is as good as a hit. There's sometimes I prefer the hit. But when a pitcher doesn't want to throw the ball over the plate, we have to be better at not offering. And it happened again yesterday. Eventually, Schwarbs hit the bag, and we get a triple, and all of a sudden the game breaks open. But for us to really get this thing done as we move it forward, man, it's going to be all about our organization of the strike zone. Getting Zoe back really helps that a lot. Wilson normally has control of the strike zone too. I think a more rested Javi Baez will not foul off the pitch that he normally does put in the stands or at least in the gap. All this stuff matters, but primarily our biggest problem has been that, period. It's just been organization of our strike zones.
For someone hearing you, a Cub fan in their car or at their desk today, hearing you talk about the importance of Ben Zobrist, they might go, well, why is he so important? And you talk about the at-bats that he takes. What about the way that he approaches a plate appearance might be something that can be beneficial to the Cubs versus some other guys?
Well, when he's at the top of the batting order, Zoe's always had this wonderful ability to accept his walk. And again, it's not just about getting a hit to him. He's able to watch the ball, watch the pitch, and he pretty much stays in his zone. Being the leadoff hitter, the guy on the deck, the guy in the hole, Castellanos, Rizzo, et cetera, today, they get a good idea what the pitcher throws just by watching how Zoe works his at bat. So it also sets a great example for the rest of the group. He's been like that since I've seen him in 2007. He's always been that guy that's been able to do that. And when he's really on top of his game from the side, it's really fun to watch because you can see when the pitch is coming from the pitcher's mound as it's thrown, and you can see where it's not going to be a strike. And this all happens very quickly, obviously, but you see how quickly he shuts it down and doesn't even offer. That's where he's a separator, and that's why he's been such a valuable player for so many years.
What does it say about Jason Hayward that he was willing to take on the challenge of leadoff, even though it's not the place where he feels most comfortable in the lineup?
Yes. I mean, it gets a little bit annoying to me personally when people hammer on Jason because this guy is a consummate pro, and he's a huge reason why we've been successful the last several years. And furthermore, I know maybe the numbers didn't reflect it, and I don't even know how to argue this, but our record was really good when he was the leadoff hitter. And that's just Jason getting out there and being in the lead. He's one of our lead bulls. And again, maybe it doesn't work the same at bat as Zobrist, but his presence matters. I believe in presence, and Jay Wood's got a ton of that. So he'll be back up there on occasion. But I'm telling you, man, on a daily basis, interacting with the rest of the group and my interaction with him, I've really grown to appreciate this fellow a lot.
The last couple of times that I've come down to the clubhouse, you know, I went and talked with Castellanos after, you know, obviously we had a great moment on the radio. And I said to Jason Hayward, I said, you know, you guys kind of remind me of each other. And he said, that's my guy. He's like, we're very much alike. And I can see it like in the approach, in the way that they care, even though both those guys are consummate professionals. There's a level of emotion that's like just underneath with both of those guys that you can see peek out occasionally. And when it happens, it's pretty great.
Yeah, there's no question about that. They are somewhat kindred spirits in that regard. I think it's really motivated by wanting to win. You know, Jason Hayward recently, like you said, as a leadoff hitter, the numbers weren't good, but Jason has one agenda, and that is to win. And look at our record when he's a leadoff hitter. I mean, like I said, you could argue there's so many different ways, like 22-10 or something, I think, to that effect. So what does that mean? I am so beyond just the numbers themselves, and I am into the numbers, but feel exists. Feel exists, and Jason provides that method at the top, and then you get Castellanos right behind him, that 1-2 situation, and they're out there eager, and they have, like I said, they have one thing on their minds, that's for the Cubs to win somehow, and that becomes contagious. So I appreciate that. I really do. And I think, you know, that both of these guys are going to be a big part of our playoff run into the playoffs this year.
I know that you're sitting there, you're worried about the next move that you're going to make. You're watching the game. But even as just someone who loves baseball the way that you do, did you have a good chuckle when you saw Brad Wick's curveball yesterday?
I did. I mean, listen, when he came here, that's supposed to be his least effective pitch, but he's been working on it, and all of a sudden he's dumping hooks in there on first pitches. And I'll tell you what, when a big left-hander like that does with this really riding fastball and he throws your first pitch curveball strike, I can't even begin to tell you what that does to a hitter's mind. You talk about uncertainty at that point. It's an uncomfortable at bat. He's throwing from an unusual angle, and he's doing it with command. And now command of a curveball with a really hard, I don't know if it's 12-6, but it's close to that break. And then a riding fastball, and composure. My God, this guy has been so composed. He's walked out there and he's thrown strikes, both appearances. He's a huge weapon, as we move forward. We're just loaded with Wicks right now, and they've both been great.
Yeah, it's so funny because a guy that's that big, like you're already kind as a hitter, you're probably already intimidated. And then to see Seager duck out of the way and then the ball fall, you know, harmlessly into the strike zone, it was almost cartoonish.
I had a guy played with Mark Clearhorse, was back in the day. He was, I think, eventually closed with the Red Sox. He was with them in the minor leagues with the Angels. Horse used to get that all the time. There's such great spin on it, and Horse was tall too, not maybe as tall, but pretty big. And you get these big guys, and it's almost like it's a slurve. It's something between a curveball and a slider. It's thrown harder with bigger break, and Horse did the same thing. There's been other guys that are able to command that pitch. I think David Cone has something to that effect also. It's unnatural, but like you suggested, when they're that tall, when guys are that tall, and then just imagine the arm up even a little bit higher, standing on the mound, it's an unusual angle for a hitter to have to cope with.
And for those of you who are sitting there wondering, well, wait, Joe's talking about the record with Hayward in leadoff. The record is 22-10 when Jason Hayward has led off this season. That's from our guys that are doing all the information. Cody Westerlund breaking it all down. We're talking for a few minutes with Joe Madden here on The Score. Joe, Felix Hernandez is one of the greatest pitchers of this generation. And I know that you had to deal with him in both Anaheim and in Tampa Bay. It's hard to watch him struggle at this point in his career. At his best, what was this guy?
Well, top three. He threw a perfect game against my race team a couple years ago in Seattle. At that time, you know, the fastball was mid-90s. And he's got an electric changeup. I mean, nobody even talks about his changeup. He's got, you know, the slider, whatever, breaking ball. But his changeup is cartoonish, and the fastball was all of that. Plus, he had a flair about him. He had this deception about him. He had this aggressiveness, this conviction about per pitch. He had all that stuff going. He started when he was 20, something like that. I remember watching him in spring training games over in Peoria. And, wow, you know, you heard all about it, then you get to see it. And he's a great guy on top of that. So I've known him for a bit. I've always been an admirer. It's different now. I've been watching the video. It's 90 and 92 maybe velocity-wise. The changeup is still effective, though, and if it's got depth, it's still a very effective pitch. And, of course, just his competitive nature. But this guy's been top. He was top three probably back in the day.
What type of approach do you want to see guys take?
Well, you have to stay on the fastball. If you try to hit the changeup, if you're looking for that, you're going to swing at the bad changeup. The ball's got to be more up in his zone. If it's down, he will get his ground balls, he'll get his chase, and that's what we got to avoid. We just need to be more mentally aware of getting pitchers to pitch the ball up, and once they do that, we have a better chance. I don't mean like up over their heads high. I just mean up in the zone, at least thigh high area, because if you're chasing the changeup down, you will, and it's going to be a swing and miss or a rollover.
Joe, do you feel like as a team you guys are whole now? I mean, Zobrist is back, Contreras is back. You've got a big, full roster of guys to choose from each night. Does it feel better than maybe it did a couple weeks ago where there was still some uncertainty from an injury and roster standpoint?
We've been battling all kinds of things all summer, and as soon as Javi's back in there, the band will be back together pretty nicely. It has been, but again, I listen, every team goes through it, and for the most part, we've held our own well. We just, again, there's only one reason why our record's not even 20 games over. We've just been inconsistent offensively, and that's what we really got to get together this last month. I've said it 1,001 times, the runners in the offense, and I'm not talking about just beating people up. I'm just talking about making pitchers get us out within the strike zone. That's it. And if we could adhere to that, we will have a nice finish to the season.
All right, I reached into the box because there's some good questions from Cub fans that want to know your opinion on this stuff. This one is really interesting. You talk about getting into the psyche of someone. The question is, Joe, would you rather never play or always lose?
Would you rather never play? I don't understand.
So if you can either never play baseball or right. You can play, but you're always going to lose.
Oh, wow. You have to want to play because even if you may lose, you still believe you're going to win. This game is so addictive. I mean, that's a tough method to wrap your mind around. I have to play baseball. You would have had to have played baseball. Yes.
Okay, that's good. Here, this other one, not as deep, but definitely is interesting. How long would you last in a zombie apocalypse?
Oh my God. I'd be the last one standing. No question.
Okay, no question. What's your... All right, I got to know. What's the method? Well, how are you going to be the last one standing?
Again, competitively speaking, I'll tell you, I mean, probably when my knee was in better shape, it'd even be more evasive. But there's just something about... It's just like competing with what we do every day. You always believe you're going to be the last one standing. And if you don't, you're not going to be. So if you believe you're not, then you won't. And then if you believe you are, then you have a chance to be. So, I mean, just from a competitive situation, I shall be the last one standing only because I believe it. And the only way that's ever going to happen is if I truly do believe it.
I like that. I like that quite a bit. Here's another one. What old person thing do you do?
Old person thing that I do? Woof. That's strange. My first thing is coffee, but I don't know if that's young and old. I'm addicted to my morning coffee. I love that. The old person thing, I like to drive cars. Is that an old person thing? They're talking about cars with no driverless cars coming up. Could you imagine that? And even the electric car, and I know the environmentalists are going to hate me, but I got to hear the engine. I got to hear the roar of the engine. I like loud pipes. So, the old person, I love to drive. I think that's like number one amongst the coffee. And other than that, old person, thank God, I can't say it's the way I dress. I mean, where I go, I just went and saw the concert the other night, Mark Knopfler from Dire Straits. My God, he was fantastic at the Chicago Theater. So I don't have a lot of old stuff things that I do.
Okay, well, since you went to a concert, I know you saw the Stones. Mm-hmm. What's the best mm-hmm. concert that you've been to? One that's really like stuck in your mind?
Well, I honestly, it's got to be the first time you see Springsteen at Lafayette. I mean, the visceral component of that in the 70s, $4 ticket, alumni gym, all that kind of stuff, that really stands up. But then the one that had the biggest impact that I could really remember was in 2005, the Stones at Anaheim Stadium. I just got the job as the manager of the Tampa Bay Devil Rays at that time. And I go to this concert, and Artie Moreno lets us use their box right behind home plate. And a lot of my players were there that I'd been working with the Angels. They're all there. So we got all this going on. Just got this job. My players are there, congratulatory. And then I watch a 61-year-old, I think at that time, Mick Jagger doing his thing. And you talk about inspirational. Because I'm like 51, I'm just getting my job as a major league manager. And then I see this guy at 61, what he's doing,